Thank you for listening to the Skeptics in the Pub Online podcast. This audio was taken at Skepticon 2025 and was recorded in front of a live audience in Manchester on the 24th of October 2025. You can find a video of this and many other recordings on our website sitp.online. Check out our website for the information about our past and upcoming events, local skeptical groups, and ways to support us.
All right, everybody, let's bring this to order. Woo, indeed, all right. Whip it up, Skepticamp. Let's hear you. All right. Okay. Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome to Skepticamp. I'm Brian Ego, also known as Eggman. I've got Igor here. Igor, be standing. There we go. One of the top feedback from last year was we are so damn good looking and the people at the back couldn't see us. So enjoy, everybody, okay? So thank you so much for being here on time. I was going to make big jokes about this being like military precision operation. But if you saw us wandering about with a few minutes to spare looking slightly panicked, then, oh. Apparently I look better dim. All right, there we go. Okay, right, everybody, just soft focus, all right? That's fine. Okay, so operation from this point onwards, okay? Not US military precision. You don't have to shave your beard or lose weight or anything like that. But we've got a tight schedule. We're going to be sticking to it, hence the horn. This is not for you, my audience. This is for our speakers. If they speak too long, they get that, okay? Although you have your own responsibility, a little bit of chit-chat between speakers is fine, but no chitty-chatty during the talks, okay? We've got like, professional shushers in the audience, okay? So it's like those, like, security people on aeroplanes. You won't know who they are, but you're going to get severely shushed if there's any interruptions during the talks, okay? You have been warned. Also, if you could, right, there are a few empty seats up the front here, by the way, if anyone wants to scooch up, all right? But otherwise, if you're in those seats, that's great. Scooch in and leave space at the aisles if you possibly can, all right? Get up close and personal in a very safe way to the people next to you, okay? All right, Igor, you can sit down now. That's fine. Yeah. We've had enough of you. Okay, so I guess we better get our show on the road now. Now, again, you get to interact with us during the course of the session as well and our online audience as well. Hello to the... Where's my camera? Hi, online audience. So you see the QR codes up on the screen now, okay? One of them is for asking questions. You can ask questions in Slido. You should be familiar with that. We do regular talks. Hopefully you've been consuming them before. And also, there is a fundraiser going on again. Emma, yes, Emma is going to be doing some silly running thing at some point in the not-too-distant future. I think Joe and Dave are going to tell you more about that. There is also an old-school bucket if you want to use, like, foldy-foldy, coiny-coiny money as well. We do accept foreign currency as well, okay? We're very friendly in that, in this respect. So please interact with us during the course of the session as well. Packed schedule for today, as you see. So we may as well move on to our first speaker. You might know him as 50% of the Fallacious Trump podcast, and he's going to be talking about the television sensation, The Traitors. Only time I've watched live television since God knows when was a couple of days ago watching The Traitors. It's amazing, right? There's the very debonair face there of Jim Cliff. Okay, he's a debonair head. Can we please give very warm Skepticamp welcome, Jim Cliff?
Thank you, Brian. Not intimidating at all. Being up first, this is fine. So, The Traitors is a hugely popular TV show in which contestants play a kind of social deduction game similar to Werewolf, Mafia, or Among Us. They don't have a lot of information to go on, so they frequently make logical mistakes, and that's exactly why I enjoy watching it. It was originally a Dutch format, but it's since been shown or is in production in 35 different countries, and I wanted to see which of the logical mistakes were the most universal, but I don't have unlimited time. I do have an actual job, and I'm not completely crazy, so I only looked at these 19 international versions. In case anyone hasn't seen The Traitors before, here's the gist. There are some regional variations, but it pretty much goes something like this. A bunch of people show up at a castle. They're given a little bit of time to get to know each other, and then they go and sit around a big table and put on blindfolds. The host then selects a few of them to be traitors, and the rest become faithful. Once the blindfolds come off, the faithful's job is to figure out who the traitors are. Every evening, everyone gets back around the big table and takes a vote, and anyone who gets the most votes, whether they're a faithful or a traitor, is then banished from the game. The traitors get together every night and then decide between themselves secretly which one of the faithful to murder. All the versions I've seen, no one actually gets killed. I assume that's universal. This goes on for about 10 episodes, and then in the season finale, there are a few more votes while the faithful try to figure out whether they've eliminated all of the remaining traitors. If they have and they're successful, then they take the prize money and share it. If there's any traitors left, then the traitors take the prize money and the faithful go home empty-handed. So the traitors are few in number, but they have the advantage of information. They know who's a traitor and who's a faithful. The faithful have the advantage of numbers, but they're working in a very low information environment. When we have a complex decision to make and we have lots of information, we get to use higher order thinking, logic and reason. When we have not much to go on, then we rely on gut feelings, heuristics and the kind of pattern seeking behaviour that means you see patterns everywhere. So the first and most common mistake that players tend to make in this game is looking for changes in behaviour. And this usually starts as soon as the blindfolds come off. Partly because that's when people have gone from not being a traitor to being a traitor. And it's true that when you're lying, you have a higher cognitive load. Basically, you're thinking harder. And that might change your behaviour. But the problem is that the faithful, at that point, have gone from just getting to know each other to now active paranoia. They are looking for every tiny clue that they can maybe see to lead them towards a traitor. So everyone is suddenly playing a game they weren't playing before. So everyone's behaviour is probably going to change. But more fundamentally, there's an issue that some psychologists call the illusion of consistency, which is the idea that people's behaviour stays the same over time, which is just not true. Our behaviour changes constantly, whether we're, depending on what we're doing, depending on who we're with, what kind of group size we're in, our hunger, our mood, all kinds of different things. So actually, a better strategy might be to look for someone who's being suspiciously consistent, because if you're playing a role, you might try to keep that role as constant over time as possible in the mistaken belief that that's how honest people behave. So is this a logical way to look for traitors? No. But is it effective? Also no. In Patolisette, the Finnish version of the traitors, this was used just in the first four episodes to suspect six different people. They were all not traitors. I found 51 different examples over the course of the different shows, and only six of them turned out to be traitors. This is way worse than chance. If you picked 51 names out of a hat, you'd expect about 11 of them to be traitors. So once they get to know each other a bit, they move on to a different method, which is trying to figure out who would make a good traitor. The initial traitors are chosen by the production team, and then as their numbers start to dwindle, as traitors get banished, the remaining traitors get to secretly recruit from among the faithful so that the series doesn't end prematurely. So if you could figure out what kind of person the production team or the other traitors might choose, this might work. But people can't decide that because their decisions vary widely on what makes a good traitor. Some people weirdly base it on jobs like being a doctor or an actor. Sometimes it's based on personality traits, like being particularly outgoing or sociable, or, conversely, blending into the background, being quiet and going unnoticed. It could be coming across as particularly clever and calculating, or not really seeming like you know what's going on at all. The problem with this is that these shows are really popular. Over 300,000 people applied to be in the UK season three, and the production team have the pick of all those people, and they know that any one of them that they pick could be recruited as a traitor at any time. So they're just not going to pick anyone to be on the show unless they have some quality that would make them at least an interesting traitor. So would be a good traitor probably applies to pretty much everyone in the cast. The other thing is that while I do maintain that this is an illogical method, it does fare much better than the first method, with 11 hits out of the 42 examples I found compared to 9 that you'd expect from random chance. So one question we all ask ourselves at some time is, why am I still here? Sometimes a traitor will choose not to murder a faithful who is close to them or who trusts them because they don't really pose much of a threat, so they might make it to the later stage of the game. So at that point, it might make sense to think that the reason you haven't been murdered is because one of the people who's close to you is a traitor. But they never wait until the later stages of the game. This almost always starts by the midpoint of the series, and sometimes a lot sooner than that. Like in this Norwegian example, where there'd only been three murders, and there were still 17 people in the game. Or Marco from Sweden here, after only 2 murders. And Alina from Finland was absolutely convinced that she'd identified a traitor, and the only reason she was still in the game was because it would have been too obvious to murder her. It would have pointed directly to the suspect. This was on day 2, after there had only been 1 murder. She was wrong about who she thought was a traitor, by the way. And the reason that Alina was still in the game, just like all of the others, is maths. And also survivorship bias, because the people who have been murdered don't get to ask this question. This line of thinking doesn't always lead to a specific suspect. Sometimes it just makes people look at everyone who's close to them, but when it does lead to a suspect, it's exactly as effective as chance. The final mistake I want to talk about, but by no means the last mistake that people make in the game, is conflating being a traitor with being generally an untrustworthy person. For some reason, people like to play this game on hard mode sometimes, and they go into a game of spot the liar already lying about something. Sometimes they're lying about their job. That might make sense in some cases. There's a couple of policemen, a hostage negotiator, a private investigator among this lot, and maybe they have skills that traitors might find kind of intimidating and murder them early in the game if they give that away. But equally, you've got Trayvon on the bottom left there from Canada, who is a PR professional who pretended he was a server at Denny's, and Riyad next to him from France, who told everyone he was a professional footballer. Some people lie about pre-existing relationships with other members of the cast, either family relationships or romantic relationships, and in one gloriously unhinged example, Charlotte pretended to be Welsh. The weird thing is that sometimes people will own up to the lie during the game, and in every single case I've seen that happen, that liar is then suspected of being a traitor. And the reason is because people see the traitors as being untrustworthy. So they reason backwards that if someone is shown to be untrustworthy, they're more likely to be a traitor. But this doesn't make any sense because they were lying before the traitors were selected. They didn't choose to be traitors. The traitors were chosen by the production team. They're playing a role in a game. If you're playing werewolf or mafia with your friends, you probably don't base your decision on which of them are more lupine or Sicilian. But something about the immersive nature of this game, the isolated castle setting, the gothic trappings of cloaks and flaming torches, I think makes it hard for the players to separate personality traits from assigned roles. There's lots of other mistakes that I don't have time to get into. All of the methods that people use are pretty much equally ineffective. This is Adam Kucharski. He's an epidemiologist, mathematician, and he wrote this book about maths in games, and he analysed all the different versions of the traitors and found that statistically, the player's decision-making was pretty much bang on what you'd expect from guesswork. Thanks very much.
Okay. Ahead of time as well, Jim. Well done. Right, let's get into questions. First one from some guy called Igor. get your drinks. Does the castle-y, murdery aesthetic change something about the decisions people make?
I think it does. Like I said at the end, I think it's they are all in this very isolated setting. They don't get any real contact with the outside world. They have their phones taken away, and they're just all kind of constantly interacting with each other and talking about the game. They're not really, for the most part, in certainly the civilian versions and the celebrity one that's currently on in the UK, they're not really talking about their outside lives very much. They're just talking about who people suspect, and it's a very kind of intense experience. And so their brains are just constantly firing and looking for patterns everywhere.
Yeah. We do have some BBC employees in the room. Can we have the next season in a council estate in Falkirk, please? That would be much more interesting, I think. Well, I think they get to do that a lot more anyway. Right, OK. Next question. What is the role of prejudice based on race, gender and other aspects?
I haven't looked into this a lot, but there is some evidence that some people, in the British series particularly, I think there's other shows, but that particularly minority women tend to get voted out early, banished early as suspected traitors. It's not overt in any of the versions I've seen, but there's a kind of subtle trend if you look at the numbers. But yeah, it's hopefully they pick well so they don't get any overtly racist people doing decision making.
So Jim's advice is if you want to be on the show, just keep your racism just under.
Under
the radar. Good. Okay, next question. If you get on the show and your goal was to win, but with the most style points, what will you do?
I mean, the best
way of getting on the show is to be a faithful at the beginning. You don't get to make that decision. They choose for you. But you be a faithful at the beginning and then get recruited as a traitor kind of towards the end, because then you're less likely to get banished because they've already banished some of the traitors. And it is hard for the... It's kind of, like I said, it's basically guesswork. And when the numbers are so big, it's unlikely they're going to get a traitor, which makes it weird when they, in the first few episodes, they banish faithfuls and then go, oh, how have we managed to do that? That's crazy. How are we so wrong? When it's basically just the most likely scenario.
For sure. Okay, next question. Ridiculous one. Do any presenters from other countries have better hair than Claudia? Of course not.
Ooh. Corinne, the Canadian presenter, who does both the main Canadian show in English and Quebecois in French, she is like a kind of super fashion icon, and her hair isn't the same every week like Claudia's, but it's sometimes quite impressive.
Okay, yeah. I don't think anything beats that precision fringe, though. Right, question from Kate. Do you think the charity aspect versus personal fortune has affected the game playing of the celebrity traitors?
I don't think it has. I think most of them are in it for the gameplay. I think they really kind of... Especially once the game starts, even if you think, oh, this is just a bit of fun, they really kind of get into it and seem to really care about it. Yeah.
I haven't heard any of the actual charities being mentioned yet this season as well. Okay, question from Lawrence. Is there any strategy that could help contestants find a traitor?
I mean, in the celebrity version, Stephen Fry came up with an interesting idea in episode 2, I think, where he said maybe instead of discussing it around the table and kind of being swayed by each other's opinions, maybe we just vote and see what everyone actually thinks, and then we can kind of go from there. And they didn't do that. They moved on because that wasn't good TV. But, there's a few things that people could try to mix it up that would make it... Because there is a lot of herding behaviour, particularly in the civilian versions, that there's people trying to... They go in with one idea and then someone says, oh, I think it might be this person. Everyone goes, oh, yeah, it's probably that person. And, yeah... avoiding being swayed by people would be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, okay. Talking of swaying people, Jim Cliff, after studying the show, do you think you'd do well on it?
I think I would be terrible at it, but mostly because I would be annoying. I would, in the first few, when people were saying, oh, I'm 100% sure this person's faithful, I would be telling them how stupid that is, and I would get voted out immediately.
We're going to have you put down. We're going to have you murdered tonight. Okay. Have you pinpointed any new logical fallacies in the show?
I don't think so, but we have used it as an example on the show a few times.
Okay. Next question. Why wouldn't you pretend to be Welsh?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, her theory behind it was that it's a trusted accent. It's like the most trusted accent or something like that. There was actually a genuine Welsh person on that series who got banished, like on episode 2, I think. So I'm not sure that holds.
Surely attempting a Welsh accent's risky as well. Yeah. Stuff, it goes into some very dodgy territory. Okay, anonymous question. Do you think it would change the patterns / decisions if people spoke about lives outside the game? I think they do anyway, right?
Sometimes stuff comes up, and especially towards the end when there's fewer contestants, they usually have like a kind of dinner party where they talk about their motivations for being in the show and what they would spend the money on and that kind of stuff. And it does make people feel close together. And it's hard because they're playing a game which is both competitive against each other, but also they are collaboratively trying to raise money to go into the prize pot. So they're working together every day to do tasks. And that does bring them closer together, and it makes it harder to vote for someone who you genuinely like, because people equate liking someone with trusting them and not them not lying to you. So, yeah, it does mix things up when they get to know each other.
For sure. Okay, right, one more question, Jim. Isn't shutting some volunteers in a building, choosing some of them to be enemies and seeing what happens just the Stanford Prison Experiment?
Well, let's hope in a future series that something like that will happen, because it'll be really good TV.
And that's really the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okie dokie. We'll call time on that. Folks, give it up for Jim Cliff. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you very much.
That was the Skeptics in the Pub Online podcast. For more skeptical content, including information about future talks, social media links, contact information,
and how to join our Discord server, head to our website at sitp.online. Music on this episode was provided by Thula Boa and is used with their permission.